So looking back at Minnesota's presidential primary, where there were 45,000, well, almost 46,000 uncommitted voters, do you think Wisconsin will top that number?
It very well could. And I say that because the energy on the Democratic Party side seems to be directed towards the uninstructed vote. The Biden campaign has this thing wrapped up. There's no serious mobilization from the Biden campaign to get people out to vote. There are a number of other interesting and important things on the April 2024 ballot, but a lot of discussion has centered on the uninstructed movement. And so I think the uninstructed movement is likely to blow past its set expectation of 20,000. In fact, I think it was quite shrewd of them to set that expectation, because when they most likely exceed that expectation, it will be viewed as a smashing success for the uninstructed movement.
Are you confused? All right. Well, that's out of Wisconsin, and the uninstructed, or there was the other name they called it, the uncommitted. There's a kind of movement to protest against the Biden candidacy. So they're like taking their ballots and voting maybe for other races, but they're not committing themselves to Joe Biden. So that's kind of a protest vote. But nevertheless, in Wisconsin, Wisconsin is such an important state in the upcoming election. It's a swing state. It has been since I can remember. But there are some really great things happening there, and we're going to be talking about them today. And oh, there are some things concerning that we're going to be talking about as well. So it affects all of us, because Wisconsin, what goes there really does affect the entire country, because they're one of those five states that we watch very carefully on these election nights. This is Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios 24/7, and you know that you can call us at 662-821-2040. And by the way, last year, Preborn's network of clinics saved over 58,000 babies because of you. 58,000 babies because you were moved and decided you wanted to help save babies' lives. You made this possible, and I want to celebrate that with you. I want to tell you that there's a young couple named Matt and Ariel, and they found themselves in an unplanned pregnancy. They were scared, and they weren't sure what to do. I don't know anything else about their circumstances, but let me just say that by God's divine providence, they found their way to a Preborn partner clinic. And once they were there, the staff comforted them and introduced them to their baby by ultrasound, thanks to you. In Ariel's own words, she said, "It was awesome. It was just awesome to see our daughter being formed inside me." So Matt and Ariel made their decision, and they decided to keep the baby, and they look forward to a lifetime of celebrating their baby girl. Well, thank you for making that possible. And if you haven't donated yet, would you consider doing that? $28 is for one ultrasound. You can go to preborn.com/Sandy, preborn.com/Sandy. And of course, any gift beyond that just provides more ultrasounds and saves more babies. So whatever you can afford and generously give, go to preborn.com/Sandy. All right, one of my favorite guests is joining us today. His name is Terry Dietrich, and he's from the largest county in Wisconsin, Waukesha. And he recently had this great victory. But again, it affects all of the state, and it affects all of us. So stay tuned for some good news for a change on Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
While the April presidential primary is shaping up to be non-competitive and there's no Supreme Court race to decide, Wisconsin will still enjoy enduring swing state status, again leaving voters here at the center of national politics in a turbulent election year. Plus, the RNC comes to town in July, so buckle up. And while the April election mostly focuses on local races, our August primary tackles state legislative races and U.S. congressional seats, including the U.S. Senate, with candidates moving on to the general election in November. And later this year, Wisconsin's new legislative maps take effect. Governor Evers just signed them into law, and they could substantially shift the balance of political power in Wisconsin. The 2024 election cycle is stacking up to be one of the most consequential in history for both our state and our country. And once again, Wisconsin lies in the very center of it all. And as a Wisconsinite, we wouldn't want it any other way.
All right, Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. That was the voice of the station manager for WISN, I think in Milwaukee. What you wouldn't know, we're going to talk about today. All things Wisconsin, by the way. Maybe not the Bear, the Green Bay. Maybe not the Green Bay Packers. But we're going to talk about their elections. And joining us is a good friend. His name is Terry Dietrich, longtime friend who's just been swinging it out of the ballpark in Wisconsin for the last several years. He's the chairman of the Republican Party for Waukesha County, which is the largest county in the state of Wisconsin. And he's going to tell us some good news this morning. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you?
Well, I'm good. Good to be with you, too. Let's just go right to the most recent election. Then I want to talk to you about other things in Wisconsin. You run an organization that you call WIS Red. I've talked about that on my morning radio show a lot. I think lots of my listeners signed up to train with you to get their states ready and know how to fight in various elections. But what's the status of WIS Red now? Just tell me that. What's the status of that organization?
Sure. I'm glad to report again, Sandy. You know, it's always fun to come on the show, and you and I usually talk about this in December before we have our kind of launch of WIS Red for the spring election, and then we do a post-election wrap-up. I'm proud to say, and I said this now three times, now it's number four, this year in our WIS Red spring races, we had 139 candidates. We ran them since December and January for their filing all the way through the primary, and April 2nd was our election. And I'm pleased again to announce that we won 127 out of 137 races, 90% win rate, which is the most ever in the history of Wisconsin. If you put that together with all 4 years now, we can capsulize it all. In 4 years, we just passed the milestone of 500 wins, so we're 514 wins in Waukesha County, the most ever in the history of our state. And I'm pleased also to announce that we have taken the majorities of every single municipality and all but one school board race. So it was another tremendous year, another tremendous win. The Democrats doubled down at least. We'll wait until the July state elections report that comes out, or state finance report, that'll show how much they spent. But we're absolutely positive this time we were outspent at least 2-1, possibly 3-1, and we still, excuse my French, beat the pants off of them.
All right, so congratulations. That's wonderful. In Chicago radio, I always had sounds I could play at will. If I could, I'd press that button that says applause, and that's what we would hear right now. But Terry, explain, these are now, this particular race on April the 2nd was municipal seats. It was city positions, school boards. And you've been winning now, as you described. You've had 4 years now of wins. What changes are you seeing in Waukesha County as a result of these efforts?
Yes, so there has been, on the negative side, I'll start with that, and then I'll finish with all the great stuff we're doing. But on the negative side, we have seen the Democrats not give up, even though we continue to beat them handily, because I continue to say that the citizens of Waukesha County don't want their radical left ideologies in our county. They've still continued to push because, as you know, we have a We have a negative neighbor to the east of us, which is Milwaukee County, which is the big Democratic stronghold. They're constantly trying to push into our neighboring suburban districts right across the line. So you're seeing that. And this year, we are for sure have confirmed that for the first time in these 4 years, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin has weighed in on local elections and sent money into their local county offices, and also some third-party fringe groups who have been active in our county. So for the first time, where we used to believe that most of the money that was spent locally was raised and spent in our county, now the left has propagated the classic situation all around the country that we're seeing, which is outside money, Soros money, money coming from outside third-party groups, untracked, to the tune of millions and millions of dollars, and that made it into our county in this round. So we're waiting in July. We'll be able to see exactly what that amount is, but we've already seen some declarations that the Democratic Party of Wisconsin actually poured money into these local races, which we think is really, really shameful, because local elections should be for the local people and the local county and the local municipalities to decide, not these big outside groups. On the positive side, of course, we defeated them. And these school boards especially, which are now heavily in the majority, in fact, some of them unanimous in the big races and in the big municipalities, these school boards have done tremendous work, knocking out all of this CRT stuff, knocking out all of the curriculum and control by teachers' unions and superintendents, et cetera. In fact, most of the superintendents in our county have actually been replaced with more conservative superintendents, which has really been a great lead. And on top of that, we basically just started putting the budgets in a lot of these big school boards back into balance, and not allowing some of this spending on some of these crazed left wing ideologies and initiatives that they've had. So the people are very happy with what our school boards are doing. We've just had one huge race. Waukesha School Board, which was probably the largest school board or school district in the county, and we had three seats up, which we had to defend, and despite huge amounts of spending by the opposition and their candidates, we defeated them. We finished 1, 2, 3. So it was another confirmation from the people of the city of Waukesha, which is very, very large, and that school district, a very clear victory showing that our people are being supported and they're doing the right thing.
You know, a couple of questions. How, I may be catching you off guard with this one, Terry, although you're great with numbers. How does the, Waukesha is the largest county, but Milwaukee County, as you said, is on your east, and it's huge because of Milwaukee. Proportionately, how would you describe the size? Waukesha is not as densely populated, is it, as Milwaukee County?
No, it's not. It's probably Milwaukee County, I believe, is about 688,000, and Waukesha County is about 410. So we're two-thirds the size of Milwaukee, and certainly the largest of what we call the WOW counties. There's Waukesha County, Washington County, and Ozaukee County. That's semi-circle Milwaukee County. So we're obviously the largest on vote totals. Yeah, we're probably about two-thirds of what Milwaukee is if they get out and vote. They generally vote on the Democratic side, and the Republican Party in Milwaukee County is quite weak and in a bit of disarray. So we're fighting this battle alone. But at the end of the day, we're watching closely. You had mentioned in your prelim to the show that we had a redistricting, which is now in the process of being implemented, which is going to definitely cause some angst here in Waukesha County, because we have at least four races now between state assembly persons and state senate down the line that will be contentious between incumbents. So effectively, these redistricting maps have pitted our people against our people in the county, and that primary will take place in August, all with the idea that there will be a continuous effort, won't stop, to try and infiltrate the eastern portion of Waukesha County and turn it blue. So the races that we've had are on the east side of our county, and we, for effectively, except for one, which is close. We're actually taking a close look at it from the election integrity side. We think there might have been some irregularities for sure, so we're not necessarily conceding that. But all of the other races that we had, municipal and school board races on that eastern portion, we did very, very well, effectively 90% win rates. So we're staving off the push from Milwaukee and the money coming in, et cetera, but it's an ongoing battle that will, for the foreseeable future, will never stop.
Terry, I think you might have answered this, but let me ask it a different way. Obviously, the people in Waukesha, enough people in Waukesha County are awake that they're fighting and understand what's happening. But do you think there are still a significant amount of untapped people who are still asleep at the wheel, as there are all over the country, during these tense, difficult times, dangerous times, really? Are there people to reach yet?
Absolutely the key question, Sandy. Glad that you brought that up, because the fact of the matter is this is the message for winning this fall and beyond, is we have a significant portion of our population, even in red Waukesha County, we call low-propensity red voters. These are people that, generally speaking, out of the last four election cycles, they voted two times or less in the elections, whether it was spring or the big fall elections. Bottom line is, I'll just give you a statistic, and this is not Waukesha County, but this is the entire state of Wisconsin. In 2022, where we had our candidate Tim Michaels running for governor, and Ron Johnson, the great Ron Johnson, running for re-election, just over 200,000 low-propensity red voters, categorized as Republicans, but they're low-propensity voters, did not vote. Tim Michaels lost by 90,000 votes. Scott Walker, going back to 2018, lost by 35,000. Supposedly, Donald Trump lost in 2020 by 22,900, I believe it was, the vote. We haven't lost an election, except one Supreme Court one. We haven't lost an election by over 100,000 votes in over 10 years. And yet we had just over 200,000 people. If they would have voted, we would have a governor, and we would have complete control of the state, and we didn't get out and vote. And the same is true here in Waukesha, so we are working very, very hard to find all those low-propensity voters in each ward, breaking it down, dissecting, and we are knocking those doors already. We are communicating with those people. The other caveat to this is the new movers. We have so many new movers coming in from Milwaukee, getting out of that chaos down there in Chicago. They're moving into our county to the tune of 800 to 1,000 new registrants per month. Wow. So you're talking about almost 10,000 people a year, at least, households moving in. That equates to probably about 5% one way or another on our vote total. The bottom line is those two categories right now have to be the target in Waukesha, in Wisconsin, and in every single targeted state, because that is where this battle is going to be won or lost. If Republicans get out and vote, if conservatives get out and vote and don't stay home, we can win. We can win. If they perform like they did in 22 in across our state and many of the others, where people feel disillusioned or they just stay home, they don't like the ilk of one of our candidates or something like this, this puts us in more jeopardy than what the Democrats can get out and muster themselves, even if they're trying to cheat. So the bottom line is we're our own worst enemy, and we realize that, and we are out there right now. We've actually been out there since last fall, knocking those doors and finding those people and essentially dragging them to vote, and we will be communicating with them all summer and all fall, because it's not going to be acceptable that they do not vote.
Oh, wow, Terry, I love your spirit, and you're so effective with what you do. But I want to stop for a second, because something else happened, and you can explain this better to us, but this is a report from WISN, that relates to your own process of getting out the vote. This is clip 2.
A pair of statewide referenda on the ballot. Both are amendments to the state constitution.
And both are projected to pass. The first makes it illegal to accept private grant money to help administer state elections. Here you see the yes vote, 54% to 46% for the no vote. The second question allows only election officials designated by law to administer elections. 58% saying yes, 42% saying no at this point.
All right. I don't know the timeline on that, Terry Dietrich, who that's who we're talking to. He's the chairman of the Republican Party in Waukesha County in Wisconsin. I know what they're referring to, but tell us, when was that and what are they referring to and how good is that?
Yes. So these were two referendums that were put directly onto the spring ballot, which that spring ballot, of course, had the primary candidates, Donald Trump, Joe Biden. But beyond that, it had all of the local races broken down by their county or their district. So it was truly the ballot statewide that everybody had to obviously vote with. And at the bottom, there were these two referendums, which were marketed fairly well on the Republican side, I would say, and people were excited about it. So obviously, they both passed. One is obviously getting rid of what we call Zuckerbucks or outside money from outside the state. You know, you have to look at the referendum in detail to find out the actual enforcement aspect of it. So forgive me for saying I think it's a very good step in principle. Optically, I think it's very good. I'm very interested to see what the enforcement mechanism of that is. And how deep it goes, and if it covers things like C3s, C4s, PACs, super PACs, and watch how that whole process goes. But nevertheless, from the standpoint of boosting the morale of our side, I think it was positive. People feel that at least there was something done about it. And then I've been a longtime proponent of making sure that the second referendum was something that was also enforceable, because that's what happened up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, with Zuckerbucks. And they were literally outside guns, outside organizations, consultants allowed to be in the polling locations and administering the election in 2020, which was just outrageous. And so this obviously puts some teeth into the aspect that unless you are a trained and certified and actually deputized poll worker, or what we call poll inspector, or you're the clerk or the actual staff of the municipality, you are not allowed to be anywhere near the voting locations to be able to process. And so I think that also has to be very clearly outlined or clarified to our local clerks, our 1,870 or so clerks, and made sure that that is enforced. But those are two very good steps, at least to acknowledge the fact that something needed to be done. And the people spoke very clearly. These were, contentious, and at the end of the day, Republicans, conservatives, and good people in Wisconsin all across the board voted yes on both of them overwhelmingly. So that's very positive for us going into the fall.
Would the second initiative also restrict or prevent people who work for voting machine companies from being present in those places?
Great question. I have not seen the details on that. I think they're probably leaving it more up to the clerks to make sure that, you know, access of those folks is watched very closely, and then what they do with those machines. I'm a little skeptical, Sandy, I have to tell you. I mean, this state has undergone a lot. I haven't seen a lot of enforcement mechanisms that have been put in place. So although there have been efforts by our state legislature to get the governor to go along with a lot of different initiatives to change our state statute and practices, in general, he's vetoed absolutely everything. So the Wisconsin Election Commission, which exists to supposedly administer our elections, there's a lot of skepticism among the electorate of their ability to enforce and their ability to execute these elections. So it comes down to the clerks. And if we have good clerks who are honest and transparent, I think that they'll take care of that security aspect, especially for the machines. They've been warned. People are watching closely from our side. But it just does still come down to what those clerks are willing to do. And, you know, obviously places like Milwaukee County and Dane County are spots that we still see irregularities even in the administration of this spring election. And allowing poll workers, not observers, but the workers who are actually deputized to be in working, they're still not getting the access that I think we'd like to see. And so, you know, I'll just say I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. You know, one of the big concerns, because I still work out in Washington to some extent online, and then I'm there often, and a lot of the election integrity experts are very, very concerned, Terry, this time around about voting via legals, because, you know, that's already started, and some congressmen have already been pushing for this. So are any things in place? Your voter ID system, is it significant to shut out illegal voting? What's the answer to that?
Again, I would say it's a gray area. Even though there may be some verbiage or text in the state statute and the guidelines, I have not seen clarity on issues like this. We actually have a circumstance in a small little caveat in our state statute that allows an illegal or a person who's not a citizen a resident in Wisconsin to actually have the ability to vote by getting, I think it's called a PPD, I don't know exactly what that stands for, but it allows them to say, I live at this residence, but I don't have any ID to show that I prove that. And the fact of the matter is they can get basically a provisional status, which allows them still to get an ID temporarily that allows them to potentially go in and vote. And I just heard about this a couple of weeks ago, and I've been investigating that. So there's little holes that we see that potentially could be exploited, just like if you remember back in 2020 and 2022, we had what we called indefinitely confined. People who were supposed to be really, truly indefinitely confined, usually by health reasons or mental reasons, they not allowed to leave their place of residence, and therefore they could check a box on the registration process for voting, and they did not have to show an ID. Now, we are a state that requires an ID. These people got away with this by declaring indefinitely confined. Well, here we are in the spring of 2020. There was somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 or 40,000 indefinitely confined status individuals in our state. And after that took place and it was exploited, we went to over 250,000 people who were all of a sudden categorized as indefinitely confined. And after some very simple investigations of these folks, Facebook and just looking at their social media, these people and definitely confined at all. They were out walking around, going to class, going to the gym, etc. It was just an absolute clear violation, and it was it's something that is not clearly defined in our state statute and was not enforced. And so these things still exist for the most part in our state statute, and the Democrats especially have taken the time and the money to go and study this very, very meticulously and find these loopholes. So some of them are straight out, in my opinion, they're straight out violations. Others are utilizing the law to the best of their ability, and then no enforcement mechanism to actually catch and stop these people. So forgive me, I love my state, I love the people of this state, but we are in a situation where I don't see much difference between now and 2020 as far as enforceability of our election laws in this state, and it makes me very, very nervous, even here in Waukesha County.
Yeah, I totally get that. We're all very nervous, and I think we hear pretty low numbers, really, of who's come across the border. I hear upwards of 15 million, so the election could be lost just on that alone. I want to ask you a couple of other questions that are important for understanding. The abortion issue, many of us believe, is going to be that issue, as though they needed something else, to defeat Republicans in the 2024 election. So we see what's happened in Arizona, where the courts have declared that abortion, unless the life of the mother has been banned, they've gone back to an older law. Michigan, of course, by contrast, has been overwhelmed by the push by the pro-death crowd. Yes, that's a very prejudiced way of putting it, and I am prejudiced, to amend the Constitution so that in language that deceives people, but now abortion is illegal for all 9 months in Michigan because of the false premise that Republicans want to do away with all abortions, and just lies like that. Okay, so this is a hot topic, Terry, as you well know. What is the situation in Wisconsin right now, and what do you think would be an effective tactic to neutralize the power that they seem to have on this issue?
I tell you, Sandy, there has been no change in the policy of the Republican Party of Wisconsin or our leadership in this. Ron Johnson has tried to bring up this issue many times, pushing for some kind of a public debate, a scheduled public debate around the state to get this issue out there once and for all, to articulate the differences in opinion between the Democrats and the Republicans, even have this debate within the Republican ranks. And God bless them for trying. It's gone nowhere. Effectively, I don't know why, but our leadership up in Madison doesn't seem to want to touch the issue. Speaker Voss had come out right after the 2022 election and said, you know, we need to talk about an exception. Didn't really articulate how many weeks, et cetera. And interestingly, within a week or two, that issue pretty much died. It was never brought up in the legislature or anywhere else in the leadership ranks. So frankly speaking, they've been mum on this. I mean, there's really no discussion of a plan, what we're supposed to say to people. You know, I'm pro-life, and, you know, most of my Catholic friends are, or Christian friends are, but the fact of the matter is, I basically don't even know the policy from our Republican leadership here in this state. I mean, we're a pro-life party here, but there has been no serious discussion about having any kind of clarification, whether it's initiatives or referendums or whatnot. We just simply haven't done it. I give Ron Johnson a lot of credit for trying to push this issue over the last years, but unfortunately it's kind of fell on deaf ears, and I think this is going to be a very difficult issue for us, at least here in Waukesha County, among young women, because they don't even listen to anything but, you know, streaming national radio, et cetera, where they're hearing a one-side position. They don't even know where we are in this. I mean, obviously, we're going to try to connect with these people, and we're going to try to keep the younger women with us based on what we do with WISRED and local elections and how we're protecting their schools and their environment and safety and all the rest of the stuff. But I wish I had a better answer for you. You know, many of the women here are even confused. They think this is a national issue. They think this is all decided by the SCOTUS, by the federal Supreme Court, and this is a states' rights issue, of which case Wisconsin's position, at least at this time, is clear. They don't even understand that. They don't really seem to understand that it's up to the state to decide and what we should do, and they're not engaged in that debate. So let's just say it's gray. It's gray, yeah. And I haven't heard anything that's going to clarify this between now and November. I hope there is something, but at this point, it seems like everybody's, and our leadership is hiding on this issue.
Well, they are. I just heard a briefing last week, Terry, out of D.C., that none of the Republican major donors want anybody to touch this or mention it. Same thing happened in 2022 when we suffered a lot of losses. Because that was a huge issue that the Democrats used, and there was a refusal to even address it by candidates because the donors would not support that. Now, that's where we are, and I firmly believe, and I bet you do too, that there is a message to counter these lies that's powerful about the value of life. We have to change our messaging. It can't be these old slogans, and we can't make the same assumptions we used to make. We have to craft real, strong, powerful, true messaging that will grab the hearts of women and help them to understand what's actually happening in abortion. I have one more question. The RNC is meeting in Milwaukee in July. So what do you think, Terry? Do you think, what do you think? What are you expecting there?
You know, look, this is it's a big effort that's being put forth as an event that's going to generate a lot of funds and a lot of interest and a lot of people coming into Milwaukee. I'm hoping that it's a safe event. I'm sure the RNC folks are taking the measures to make sure it's safe. Obviously, Milwaukee is not safe. It's a city just like we see all over the U.S. that's been hijacked in many areas and is very, very violent. So, you know, the downtown area, of course, is beautiful. We're right on Lake Michigan. It's a beautiful city. I'm hoping that goes safely and calmly. You know, with regard to excitement in our area, I think people are just kind of getting a feel for it and the fact that it's coming here. It's not been anything here in Waukesha County, which we're effectively only 20 minutes away, 20, 25 minutes by car. But it seems like lots of things are going on behind the scenes. Nothing that super exciting is going on. Last week they had kind of the kickoff party downtown. And obviously this is going to be something where, frankly speaking, besides President Trump or former President Trump coming in and accepting the nomination, I just don't see that much excitement over other issues and other platforms and those types of things. But nevertheless, I'm sure it'll build steam and be exciting to those that are really into the political aspects. I'm not sure it's going to change the needle too much here in Wisconsin. You know, Milwaukee is obviously a stronghold of the Democrats, so maybe a little bit of influence there, and the rest of the state is going to vote as it is. And as I said, the most important thing is we get all those low-propensity voters out to vote. So, you know, it'll be an exciting event. It'll bring money and tourism to Milwaukee, so I guess that's a good thing. The idea that it maybe is going to move the needle a lot for Democrats or swing voters, I'm not so sure. So, but it's going to happen, and there's going to be a lot of money poured in here. So Waukesha County is going to be trying to be part of it, and hopefully it'll be an enjoyable time. It'll be, you know, mid to late July. The weather should be great. It should be people can come out and see what Wisconsin's all about. So looking forward to it, but a little bit cautious.
Well, I have to join in to say Wisconsin is gorgeous. Bruce and I almost moved to Milwaukee instead of moving to Florida, but we chose Florida. But Milwaukee is beautiful. The people of Wisconsin are wonderful people. And Terry, you're a good ambassador. Terry Dietrich, chairman of the Republican Party for Waukesha County. We appreciate so much your report, Terry. We wish you all the best and Godspeed to everything that you do. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Last year, Reborn Network of Clinics saved over 58,000 babies. I told you that earlier. And that's because of you. It can't happen without your help. 58,000 babies just last year. Some of you are able to pay $28 for an ultrasound, and you've done so generously. Doesn't really matter how much, it's how much you can afford and what God lays on your heart. Some of you have more means. You can pay more than $28 or give more than $28. And if you have that means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a bigger way? A tax-deductible donation of $5,000 would sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue, on average, 200 babies. Is that something you could do? If so, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And let me thank you again, always, for your generosity. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. It was my disabled daughter. I talk about I've Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at afr.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you again. I've asked my husband, of course, he's a former FBI agent, retired, and also former federal prosecutor for Cook County, that's Chicago, and of course, Wisconsin is in his blood. I guess I'll let him tell you about that. A lot of our heart is in Wisconsin, isn't it, sweetheart?
It certainly is. My dad is from Fond du Lac, or was from Fond du Lac, and I loved going up there, and of course, I do like that football team up there, Green Bay Packers.
I didn't even ask Terry about that. I should have asked him about the Green Bay Packers. All right, you were listening, so anything grab you out of that conversation with Terry?
Well, I think it's something that we have to address if we are going to win this election, and by we, I mean conservatives, and that is what he talked about, the low propensity red voters, which to me also translates to a lot of them are anti-Trumpers. And, you know, a lot of people think that they're being righteous by saying, I don't like Donald Trump, therefore I'm not going to vote for him. I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden, but I'm not going to vote for Trump. No matter how you slice this, if you don't vote for Donald Trump or you don't vote for conservatives, you are in essence de facto voting for a Democrat. Because every vote that you do not cast means the Democrats need one less in order to get their person elected. And there has to be a strategy to mobilize these people who do not like President Trump for personal reasons. You have to get by the personal reasons and convince them that his policies and his past actions as president will benefit them and will benefit the country.
Well, you know, I always say, Bruce, we have to look at what a man does, not at what he says. Now, some people say, yes, I've seen what he does to women. Well, we don't know a lot of that's true, first of all, but I'm sure a lot of it is true because he was a playboy billionaire. He's not a Christian. We cannot judge him by our same standards. We wish we still live in a country where we could only elect strong men of values who are Christians. But that ship has sailed. And so we have to look at the whole thing. We're not asking for a pastor. We could never tolerate some of the things he's done in a pastoral candidate unless he were totally redeemed. But we have to look at what he did and what he's capable of doing, what he's saying, because he usually does what he says. And so that's the basis upon which we have to do this. And I'm with Bruce. You can't just dismiss him because you don't like how he says, you don't like his. I used to mock the mean tweet thing. I know I did that. Some of you may have been stung by that, but there were so many complaints about his mean tweets. And when Joe Biden came in, he started immediately doing such horrible things, like doing away with guarding the border, tearing the wall down in many places that Trump had built. We'll just pick that one, okay? And then I would just say, as I'm reporting this to you, but he doesn't do any mean tweets. There are no mean tweets with Biden. Isn't that a relief? And so I'm just trying to give you perspective on how we have to view this. And so that's what Terry's talking about too.
Well, I think the big elephant in the room, and I am so flummoxed by this issue, is the abortion issue. As Terry said, he doesn't even know what the Republican Party's platform is.
The platform hasn't changed.
But how they are going to message this to voters. And you better message it to voters, because you can bet the Democrats, I think this is going to be their lead issue.
Of course.
Because they cannot run on their record. They cannot run on the border. They cannot run on the economy. They have to pick, and they're very good at it, pick an emotional heart tug issue that goes right to the core of many people who swing back and forth on how they vote. And a lot of those people are suburban women. And this is an issue that directly impacts them.
Yeah, and in the vacuum of a message, which is a true message, it's a powerful message, that the Democrats want abortion for all 9 months and sometimes after the birth. And I can prove that in case you doubt that. Their approach is radical. They've never met an abortion they don't love. They don't mind that girls are taking the French abortion pill, RU486, which is two pills, which kills the baby in your womb and then expels it, causes it to be expelled in the privacy of your own home. So women are delivering babies, you know, in their toilets. It's traumatic. I don't care if you're not hearing about it. Trust me, it's happening, and it's traumatic. We have to be talking about that. So young women with purple hair and earrings who are getting so upset about losing their so-called right to do this can clearly see what it is they're doing and the repercussions on their own lives. And that goes for men, too. Don't get me started. We should do a whole show on this, but I'm just saying we have to fight back. And even if the Republican Party, chooses not to do that, we need to formulate really good, strong responses, not attacks, but declarations of truth about the harm of abortion, the harm to the baby, of course, but the harm to the mother, the harm to the fathers. As I've said before, I did a show in Chicago years ago. I opened the phone lines. I thought how clever. I would ask for men if there would be, by chance, one or two out in the audience who regretted paying for their girlfriend's abortion or their wives or encouraging someone to do that. And would you believe, I had a three-hour show then. My phone lines lit up constantly with men telling me how they regretted. Some even cried every year on that date. They remembered. That's the kind of thing we have to say to people across America. So there is a way to fight this, and we have to be able to, if the Republican Party won't do it, you and I, those of us that believe life is sacred, need to take that on.
You know what you just said, honey, is that is so true, is this abortion issue is not about shaming people. It's not about trying to turn someone around by shaming them. That will not work, and that is not a wise way to handle people. It should be about providing true information. And sometimes that has to be done in a very rough way, in some people's opinions, by showing photographs, by talking about the actual procedures, like you were just talking about the RU486. That is not just taking a pill and the baby disappears. The baby is killed by the one pill, and then it comes out of the person in the with the second pill. And I would bet if you talk to these quote-unquote healthcare providers for women, they do not explain that to these young girls in the in-depth way they need to. I bet many of these girls are absolutely shocked by what happened.
And traumatized.
For in many ways,
it's worse than abortion, because in the clinic they go under, or they don't, you know, partially, whatever they do. I've never been there, but I'm assuming it's one of those two things. And then some doctor does that for them, and they never see the baby. And so, listen, this is just wrong. It's got to stop. Please don't lose your passion to stop this. It's easy to gloss over. We've gotten used to complacent about being victorious on so many fronts in the pro-life movement, but it is a battle that's being waged again. We have to reframe it in different ways, not untrue, not manipulation, just impact on what this really means. Honey, thank you for joining me. And I really, really thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.